We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Anthony Herron.
All we got to do is do our job and punch him in the mouth every single play. Yeah.
Football insider for 670 The Score.
We do what we do. We drive all game long.
And Fox 32.
Majority of folks here in my life do pronounce it Herron. Even like my pops, who he should know how our last name is pronounced.
And the Pac-12.
How many jobs you got?
One.
One job.
And Big Ten Sirius XM.
Whole lot of Herron out there.
Anthony Herron talking ball with Lawrence Holmes on 670 The Score.
Anthony Herron does an incredible morning show. Jason Goff over Sirius XM, channel 372. He works as an analyst for us. He is a black man, and he's the father of a black man, and he joins me now on Al Pamani Ford Hotline. Al Pamani Ford in Melrose Park has 500 new and used vehicles for you to choose from. Big Ann, how are you doing?
Good. Overall, man. I live downtown, so live in the thick of a lot of what went down over the weekend and, you know, just over the years when things are happening and when folks want their voices to be heard. Obviously, this is the hub of where they're going to come in Chicago. So, I mean, whether it was Laquan McDonald or the NATO summit, you know, we can literally look out our window or stand on our balcony or go out and watch or walk. You know, we certainly weren't outside having a 2-year-old son. We weren't outside in the midst of it this weekend. But my wife and I have we go out there, whether it's been beforehand and talking to each other, talking to folks on the street. I make it a point when there's an event that's kind of coming to downtown Chicago where I know a police presence is kind of being set up in advance of it, as was the case this weekend where they're kind of getting out and getting ready. I'll go up and talk to cops. I mean, I got family members in law enforcement and friends around the country in law enforcement. And yeah, I go up and just kind of pick their brain a little bit about how are you preparing for this? What are you expecting to see? And, you know, I mean, some folks are more willing to just talk and converse in situations like that than others, but definitely did a little bit of that just over the couple of days that we were out, because it's been this, I was saying to Herb, just in the break, it was a really weird kind of juxtaposition of me and my wife, Kelly, just kind of taking it in and watching it and consuming it, you know, viscerally, but then also having a 2-year-old son wanting to keep his world as normal as possible as well. And when it's nap time and there's more sirens than usual outside, or there's yelling outside or gunfire that's in the distance, then, you know, all right, that sound machine's getting cranked up a little bit, that door's getting closed to make sure he's not hearing some of those things. And then from there, when he's awake, I mean, you've met Bishop. He's a fairly large 2-year-old, and he's very strong and he's super cute.
Very energetic,
and he gives great hugs. So the hug quotient in our household was probably at an all-time high throughout this weekend, man.
I think that there are a lot of our white brothers and sisters that when we talk, if we were to say the talk, that they would think birds and bees. And sure, that's one of the conversations that you have with your parents, but when you're talking about people of color, black men specifically, the talk sometimes centers or oftentimes centers around how you're going to act when, not if, when you encounter the police. Do you remember when this happened for you, and what's going to be your approach when you have to have that conversation with Bishop?
There are, you know, I'm fortunate both my parents are alive and doing well. We, you know, talk every day, FaceTime every day with them and Bishop. And so I still got both of them in my lives. And there's moments throughout, because a chunk of my childhood was spent in Inglewood when I was young, and going to St. Francis de Paula, a school that shut down on the south side back in the day. But it was a Catholic school on the south side of Chicago. And then they moved us out to Bolingbrook, and then in middle school and beyond, that's where you know, my parents and our family has kind of been since then. And that transition from being in kind of what was sort of an Inglewood bubble, because my parents were able to shield, and I'm the youngest of four, so my older siblings were able to kind of go out and be about a bit more than me and my one of my sisters who are younger than them, but they were able to kind of shield us and have us in a bit of a bubble at that age when we were still existing in Inglewood. And then when they moved us to the burbs, we're still there and seeing family and everything else. But the suburban end of it was very different, you know, being the only black kid in my class throughout most of the time I was in school in middle school and chunks of high school. And the way that, especially, you know, that they would both communicate with me, but I remember multiple conversations just with my dad. Like there was a point where I don't know exactly how old I would have been, but, you know, out playing with fireworks at the school around the corner. And when the cops showed up, they hear the fireworks, cops show up, everybody else ran. I happened to stay there, hand the fireworks over to the police officer, and he didn't do anything in that moment that was untoward. Just, you know, had a talk, went about my business, went home, told my folks about it. And I just remember, you know, my folks letting me know that was the right way to handle things. But then that tinge of caution, of warning, of in recognizing that you handling things the right way won't always mean that those around you, that law enforcement, that others will handle things the right way as well. And you need to be prepared for that. And I've seen them go through things, experience things. My dad's from a little town in Mississippi, grew up, born in 1940. So, you know, stories that I would never be willing to share on air, but he came through that, came through Vietnam, him and his brothers, no problem at all. My mother, south side of Chicago, basically raised seven other siblings alongside her parents. So, I mean, just really strong people who set the type of example that also has me in a position where there are things that I told my wife this weekend that I'd never told her, things that I still at this point haven't told my parents that I've experienced in not just younger and being in the burbs and being, you know, driving around with my black friends or whatever and experiencing things with the police at that point, but in being an adult, in traveling in a professional manner in Minneapolis or Boise, Idaho or Philadelphia, James Madison University in Virginia. I don't remember what town JMU is in, but things that I've experienced over the years, even traveling in a professional capacity of being harassed, being taken out of the vehicle by police, that pales in comparison to what I know folks I love and other family members have gone through. And so it's honestly, and I'm, you know, just evaluating some of these things over the weekend as I'm kind of talking to my wife and sharing some things with her that I hadn't even, you know, some things I had told her, but she remembered other things that I hadn't even shared with her before, that that manifests itself in a way where, because I feel formidable mentally, physically, financially, I know, I'm confident I can handle all those things. And so I feel in a way like it's not necessary to burden my wife with it, burden my parents with it, because everybody has their own thing. And so I'm cool and I handle that and I kind of keep moving with it. But in a way, it kind of, it normalizes, or at some point over the years, normalized the acceptance of it, just with me personally, me accepting that if there's an interaction with a cop that's dangerous, that's frustrating, that's being pulled from the vehicle and having a gun drawn while it's going on, for hesitating at a stop sign in Minneapolis, I'm not going to go into all the details of it because that belabors things, but that being an experience that I've had as an adult, as a professional, because I'm in a nice car and there's one of my black friends in the vehicle with me, and the threat that seemingly a police officer feels in pulling me from the vehicle and putting me through the paces, it's unfortunate that is something that doesn't necessarily make me, I guess, apathetic about police brutality in the black community at large, but I know that not everyone is as formidable as me mentally, physically, socially. And so the way I can handle that, deal with that, compartmentalize that, and move on from it, it made me sad this weekend. And again, another example of how folks who don't necessarily have the household that I grew up in, the family and love I've been surrounded by, the resources I have at this point, and how they have continued to have to exist in that world. And that, to me, is the message that ends up getting lost when you have folks looking at looting or rioting or anger and saying that somehow eliminates the horrors that we saw 1 week ago. Because there's no way that it can. And ignorance can be a blissful thing, but we as a society, it looked like for a few days, were looking to lead ourselves out. A lot of us who were willing to exist in blissful ignorance before that, regardless of Sandra Bland or Trayvon Martin or Laquan McDonald or Ahmaud Arbery or any of the, or Medgar Evers or anyone over the last decades, that very public moments like this have taken place, horrible moments. And then George Floyd happens while we're in the midst of a pandemic and everyone's at home and everyone's able to just look at it and exist in it and not move on so easily. But then when the protests happen and looting happens, violence takes place, and now the focus gets shifted from that, from what lit the powder keg of last week, from all the horrible things that happened just in the month of May alone, and now the focal point is, well, why are they looting? We can have a discussion about why they're looting, why it's wrong, and attempt to explain perhaps where that comes from. And I'm, you know, some of these protests that happened in my neighborhood, and I'm out there watching, you know, the Black Bloc, like during the NATO summit, Black Bloc is out there. You can see them infiltrating things in peaceful moments and causing anarchy. That's a discussion that can be had in detail, but that doesn't mean it eliminates the initial impetus of why folks are supposed to be there.
Talking with Big Ant here on The Score, I think that you also have another responsibility. This is, and this will give people an opportunity to understand privilege from a different viewpoint. I have the privilege of being little. I'm small. Like, I'm a just above average size person.
Let's go with that. Yeah.
But Big Ant is a big man, and there are the level of fear that takes place, I imagine, when you are pulled out of a car and a police officer sees that this is someone who played defensive end in the NFL, that's an added layer of this, where there's already a threat that is perceived whenever you're talking about a person of color and black men in particular. But now you add in the idea of a large, strong black man, and then it becomes a completely different situation. What's that like?
I mean, just it's a running joke with me and my wife at this point, where what I do share with her constantly, because I know it well. For one thing, my wife's a worrier anyway, but you know, just when I come back from a road trip and simply the elevator doors open and, you know, not just a quick flinch, but literal audible, you know, sort of horror just at the sight of me. Now that can be a number of different things that just happen from folks being startled at seeing someone my size rounding a corner or stepping off an elevator or whatever it is. But especially in pockets of the country that I travel to on occasion, whether the West Coast or down South or the Northeast or whatever, it's certainly, in my mind, very easy to presume what some of that stimulus comes from as well. You know, John Jansen was on the air with me this morning, and I really appreciated him. You know, great Michigan offensive lineman, long, excellent career in the NFL. And he was talking about, for him, in his perspective, and, you know, my impression is me and John are on opposite ends of the political spectrum, but that doesn't stop us from having discussions about anything. And one of the things he was saying today, as we were just addressing this past weekend, was for him, as a guy, a big white guy from kind of rural-ish Michigan, and the way he lives his life, and in wanting to make sure that the example he sets for his kids and the way he communicates with his kids is about how you're treating people, how you're perceiving people. And for me, it led me into talking about, and honestly, I don't even remember if this part of the discussion was on the air or off, but to enter an interaction, a circumstance with a preconceived notion, to enter an interaction with some level of a stereotype, I honestly feel like that's just human. Our experiences will inform how we view someone when we first hear a voice, when we first see them or interact with them. To me, though, to be able to take the aptitude necessary, and it's really not a lot, but just to go beyond whatever your preconception is about an individual. And it is so much more important for folks of influence, for folks in power, for folks like law enforcement, to be willing and able to do that, because the level of influence, the level of potential danger that you can wield on someone who you have power over can be far more life-altering for them than it is for you. So, yeah, there are so many times, just being a big black guy, where, yeah, walking around, folks are just going to see you in a certain way, especially if you're of casual garb. And, you know, one of the stories my wife wasn't aware of that I was just sharing with her over the weekend was just about, you know, I fortunately still don't necessarily look old yet, so I get confused for a college student or an athlete who might be at a university that I'm calling a game at. And if I'm at a restaurant, I don't necessarily go out, you know, cruising the college scene late at night, but just at dinner time, I'm done and just walking through and things are happening. And if a scuffle breaks out and I'm in the area, then there's an assumption that I'm a part of it. And there's been multiple incidents of that getting infuriatingly uncomfortable, potentially dangerous for me, for others around me. And again, a stereotype is one thing, but it doesn't eliminate, whether your stereotype is positive or negative, it doesn't eliminate your ability to break through that, to go beyond that and see the person for who they are in that moment. Like the Amy Cooper lady in Central Park, apparently, as far as just her political allegiances, would be someone who you most would assume, if they just looked at what her interests are, or what her resume would be, that, oh, she's an open-minded person. But in that moment, that interaction she had where she was upset that a black man wanted her to put her dog on a leash, she immediately went into weaponized race mode. So just because you have a black friend, or because you can laugh with minority people, or because perhaps you've never had a true, what you would perceive as racist moment in your life, it doesn't mean you can't be guilty of racism. And it is something that we should all continue to watch ourselves for and guard ourselves of, because we will all go into situations, into interactions with a preconceived notion, and recognize that notion and how you may treat the person in that moment can be something that changes their world.
One more thing that I want to ask you about this, and being someone who covers college sports in a big way, how do you imagine, or how, let me do it this way. How would you prefer that the leaders of college sports, specifically coaches, react to some of this?
I've been struck, man, by how many college coaches, college administrators have taken to social media and posted commentary about where we're at as a society and what we all watched take place between last week and throughout the weekend. And, you know, I mean, so much of George Floyd was just kind of building off of just a lot of other angering moments in the weeks leading into that with Breonna Taylor, and I mentioned Ahmaud Arbery and everything else. And my jaded, my skeptical sort of eye on these things doesn't necessarily make me believe that we're in this golden age of collegiate coaching or collegiate administration activism. I believe it's because the voices of college athletes, college football players, college basketball players has become louder than ever, more collective than ever, and them trying to seize control of not only just their name, image, and likeness from a financial perspective, but just what their own person can be, what their own sort of self-agency can really be as someone of influence who is right now, as far as, you know, financially or in the viewpoint of others, in a very similar spot to where it was 20 years ago when I was a college athlete, or 50 years ago when other folks were college athletes. And to be able to recognize and see some of that personal agency, I believe it has put their coaches on notice that we have expectations that if you're going to be here and supposedly be our stewards for the next 3, 4, 5 years, that you need to have your voice heard on the things that are important to us. And I think college coaches are recognizing that, and so that's had them taking to social media over the last few days, and administrators are doing the same. And so some who may have wanted to do so in the past but didn't feel safe to do it, now there is more of a collective of folks willing to put voice to it. And honestly, if the end gets the results there, I don't necessarily mind if not everyone has the same sort of verve for social justice that everyone else around them does. But if people of influence are willing to put voice to it, then it can still lead us on the path towards, you know, whatever there is that I hope there is there by the time my 2-year-old is a teenager or is an adult. Then I think all the collective of that still ends up being positive, even if I'm fairly skeptical on how many football coaches really want to be tweeting about social justice. I don't really think that's necessarily all coming from a real heartfelt place, but it's there, and I do think it still matters and helps.
I think so too. It's been encouraging to see some of the big name, like Trevor Lawrence speaking out. Like, I think that's a big deal, and I think it puts a premium on what the next thing that Dabo Swinney talks about publicly. And the same thing of when are we going to hear Nick Saban talk about some of these issues? And I wouldn't say that Saban's been on the wrong side of this stuff.
Right.
There have been other people who have, but it would be nice to see some of those folks really take it seriously and listen. Because to me, the educational aspect of it can work both ways. We're sure the coaches are supposed to be there to shepherd these young men through an education of football and maybe perhaps life, although I think we probably put too much emphasis on that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also incumbent upon those coaches to understand where their players are coming from, both literally and figuratively, so that they can be better serve others that happen to come behind those players that are already on their roster.
There was because the fan bases, especially for the major universities, what's thought of as the Power Five, where you've got, you know, millions of people around the country who are passionate about these particular institutions. And there was a moment last football season, I think it was fairly early in the year, where there was a Penn State football player who, you know, he just happens to wear dreadlocks like a number of other football players do. There was a Penn State alum who felt it behooved him to send a letter to this Penn State football player about how awful and disgusting he looks wearing dreadlocks on the football field, and he should be clean cut like some of the other great Penn State players of the past. And while that notion doesn't put the health or the life of Jonathan Sutherland in any jeopardy, any danger, but that notion is just an inkling of what individuals in society can view as their privilege to tell folks, especially to tell young black men how they should carry themselves, how they should look, how they should interact, because it may not suit their sensibilities. And I think the more that, and James Franklin, Penn State's head coach, after that happened, he did a very nice job publicly coming out and essentially sort of reprimanding that individual Penn State fan. And I think the more that coaches of influence, coaches in sports of influence, in football, in men's and women's basketball, will be willing to have their collective voices heard on the agency of their players. And it's building. It is certainly building with name, image, and likeness chief amongst those right now. That's going to be a major thing. But just in the agency of their players to be allowed to be individuals, to be who they are organically, then that will influence the fan base to accept what that is, not just within the name brand of their favorite university, but just within the humanness, the humanality of those individuals who you're out there cheering for. And you may buy a jersey with their number on it, but their name can't be on it because they'd have to get paid for it if it was. But if you love what they're doing for your institution that much, then allow them to be them. And we're starting to see more of that in collegiate sports. And it's being forced. You know, the NCAA doesn't want to give up any control. Football coaches really don't want to give up much control. They're being dragged there kicking and screaming, but it is starting to change.
Big Ann, I appreciate the time and the perspective. Thank you so much for being on the show today.
Always my pleasure, Loho. Love listening to you, as you know, man, and thank you for lending your voice to everything you do, bro.
That is Anthony Heron. He is terrific, and I'm glad to call him friend and colleague. I need to take a break. Back after this on The Score. Today's show is being produced by Herb Lawrence and Sean Anderson. I was texting with Herbie earlier today, and I was saying, you know, he knows that the mic is open. He can speak whenever he wants. Same thing with Sean, but I wanted him to know that today, that if there are some things that he wanted to say, that he could. And I'm stuck in between. Look, I don't want to push Herbie out onto a ledge where he's uncomfortable talking about some of this stuff, but I did want to give him an opportunity. So, Herbie, if there are things that you would like to say, feel free to say them. If not, then I can start talking about baseball's 114-game schedule or something else.
I just don't know why this is different than the other times where police officers have killed black men and women on camera. Like, literally, the "I can't breathe" was the same thing that Eric Garner said when he was getting choked out by a New York City police officer. That didn't take like this George Floyd murder. I'm surprised, but also the fact that people are more, it seems like to me, just anecdotally, that people are more involved this time. It feels better that the message is getting across that police brutality will not be tolerated by anybody, and especially against African-American brothers and sisters. I don't know why. I don't know why this one on camera was different than the other ones on camera. But not looking a gift horse in the mouth, and I hope that people take notice. Instead of just, like you were saying, and Anthony was saying, people who want to move on from the murder of George Floyd, cold-blooded 9 minutes on a man's neck, to, oh, that store is getting looted. Your whole message is down the drain now. Those people who want to do that and move on from that quickly didn't want to actually
have that conversation in the first place.
Exactly. Get into that dialogue of why. And like Anthony, I feel a little privileged because I was not raised in the city of Chicago. I'm a suburbanite. I'm from Wheaton. But like Anthony, I've dealt with cops that I felt it wasn't on the up and up. You know me. I'm not doing anything untoward. I'm out there just driving as a kid, as a 16-year-old. People taking me out of the car, checking my thing. I didn't know my rights back in the day. Checking for drugs and such in my car. You know, I mean, anybody that knows me knows that's not my game. And so, yeah, I haven't had the showdowns or the fear of a gun pointed at my head or anything like that, but I am cognizant of that might go down one of these days. And I'm fearful of that. I know, as Anthony says, I can act in a certain way, but it doesn't matter to some people. Like, what was George Floyd doing? Not resisting. He was just being himself, and that cop and the three other cops, they should be also tried because they just sat there and let things and evil things happen. And they can't be called good cops. No cop who allows bad things to happen and no person that allows bad things to happen could be called good. So that's what I'm talking about, where you were talking on Friday about we need the good cops to step up. We need good leadership to step up and filter it down to their rank and file. Don't let bad habits, don't let the way things have always gone just be the rule. We need to serve and protect. And if you see something untoward, you speak on it. You become the good cop that you think you are. But the thin blue line garbage, that has to end. That has to end. We're all citizens of this country. We shouldn't be controlled, especially as black people, by cops and have to have some acquiescing to them as if they are our masters. Forget all that noise. If they are there to serve and protect, not to control. So that's what my thoughts are on this. As a black man, you have that underlying rage of being black in America. And I don't know if people can understand that unless they are.
It's a hard thing to explain. It really is. But you see some of it play out where there are these injustices that take place and you're not, in some cases, like you're not allowed to be vulnerable. You're not allowed to have emotion, that you're not seen as a human being, like a fully functional human being. And the thing that you're talking about, the false narrative of the perfect victim, like those are the things that you sit there and you go, you know, it's wrong. So just call that out. Like, just call that out. And if you are, and there are the people that there are most people that I'm interacting with via the tech zone and on Twitter, they are either curious or they are looking for solutions. And when you offer them a different perspective, they're like, okay, like I didn't see it that way. But there are always going to be the people that think that they have some sort of intellectual property that no one else does. And that then they want to talk about, well, why aren't there marches when there are people that are dying every week? Guess what? There are. And if you'd like for me to point you to them, I can. If you actually want to help, if you actually want to dig deep and get into the weeds on some of this stuff, I can point you in the right direction. My block, my hood, they can help you. Jamal's been doing a great job over the last couple of days handling some of this. iGrowChicago.org. Why don't you go and help some kids in Inglewood learn how to farm? And help to bridge the gap between the police population and the people who live in Inglewood. You don't have to send us these text messages and flex your Twitter and text muscles. You could actually go help. You could literally go help right now.
This is what I'm talking about, Lawrence. The whataboutisms. What about black and black crime in Chicago? What about it? What about it? Do you want to solve it? Do you want to help out? Help out. Stop just trying to deflect to something else. Well, we got a problem right now. And if you want to help that, go and help that. Don't talk to me, the black guy you know, about something I don't know about. I don't know how to fix it. And black-on-black crime is a misnomer. There's no such thing. It's just crime. Just like when white people aggrieve other white people. just crime. It's a way to deflect from the issue at hand.
And if
you're not talking about
help,
the issue at hand, then shut up. Don't say a damn word.
If you want to help, there are people cleaning up the Walmart right now on 47th and Cottage Grove. They'd love to see you. They'd love to see you lend your talent and your clear joy in helping places be better. You could go right over there. On 71st and Chapel right now, South Shore. Go on over. Help out. When I bring up iGrow, I guarantee you those kids would love to see you. They'd love to know what you know. There are plenty of ways that you can get involved. Even if it's with your money, feel free to donate. If those are things that you really care about, and they're things that I care about, so I lend time and money to organizations that I think are moving in the right direction to try and stop some of those ills that our society has. But if it is so important to you, hit me up. I will set you up with someone that can help. I promise you. If you really want to do the work, I can put you in a position to do the work. You could literally get your hands dirty in the urban farming that's going on at iGrow. If you want, you could pick up a broom and drop off garbage bags at 47th and Cottage Grove right now. If it means that much to you. But to think that you're going to win a rhetorical argument with me on this, for whatever it is that you think that you're accomplishing, know that you're not. All you're doing is telling on yourself. Your slip is showing, and we can see it. And the goal of a lot of these conversations is that when my white brothers and sisters see this type of activity and rhetoric going on with friends or family, like, that next step in wanting to be a part of the solution is you calling people on it and making them as uncomfortable as they think they're making everybody else. So when you see it play out at Thanksgiving, or when you go visit an uncle, that uncle that you hate because he's so open with his disdain for people of color and women and folks in the LGBTQA community, call them out. And maybe that's a way that things can get better. But if you are really, really interested in being someone who wants to help, there are plenty of places where you could do good today. But it seems disingenuous when you start talking to me about things that happen in Pilsen or South Shore or Inglewood or Hyde Park or Little Village when, one, you've probably never stepped foot in any of those neighborhoods, or two, you don't care about the people who live there. I know that you think you have a little tote board on your screen of when you send me a text or a tweet, ding, 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 I got a point. Okay. But since you're big and bad, take your big and bad ass over to neighborhoods that need help. If you're so concerned about black on black crime, what is it that you're doing? What are the things that you can do to help out in that regard? Then go do them. That's all that needs to be done. I need to take a break. I would like to talk a little bit more about police, and I don't have any solutions, but I do have some things that I would like to say about policing and what I hope happens for our police forces locally and nationally. I'll do that next here on The Score.
McNeil and Parkins are coming up Shep texts me a beautiful picture of his little daughter to remind me that they're going to have Dan Patrick on today. So that's good. They're also going to talk with Jim Williams, who's been doing some excellent work for CBS2. So that's going to happen on their show. And my guy, Evan Moore, is going to be on at 4:30. You want to talk about a guy that's in it and of it. Evan Moore is one of those dudes. He's in South Shore right now helping out. He's a good man, and he'll be on at 4:30. Let me say this about our police officers, and then I'll move on and get out of the way. What I want for the officers, specifically in Chicago, but this is for them nationwide, a couple things. I want them paid more. I don't think police officers make nearly enough money as they should. But with that extra money, I want there to be some steps taken to root out the people inside of the department that don't deserve to be there. That's a really important thing, that there are a lot of people that are hiding inside of police departments that have no business with a gun and a badge. And I want those people rooted out by the people who genuinely want to serve and protect the public. I want better training in de-escalation. Again, this is another one of those things that was promised to us by Mayor Lightfoot that I don't think that has been accomplished. I also want there to be more mental health resources for officers, because the stuff that they see on a daily basis, I don't know how you cope with that. That's something that I don't have the experience of. And I can't imagine that they aren't dealing with levels of PTSD every single day from the moment that they start working as police officers. Those are things that I think are really important. The most important being making sure that the cops that dishonor what it is that you do are called out by you. You have to call them out. You have to point them out. The thin blue wall, that's got to go. When these people are messing up your community and messing up your life, it is your responsibility to take them to task. I've had a couple of police officers after Friday's show reach out to me, and I was encouraged by them and them saying that they want to take action and they're going to take action. I'm going to hold you to that. The change isn't just going to be of the people who are oppressed. It has to be of the class of the people that have been getting away with oppressing folks. To everyone who listened today, to everyone who donated, for real, thank you. I can't even express to you how appreciative I am of you being willing to do that. Thanks to my parents. My mom is clearly worried about me because she was texting me throughout the entire show. I'm okay, Ma. I'm okay. Thanks to Big Ant Heron. Thanks to my man Adam Amin. Congratulations on getting the Bulls gig. Thanks to Sean, young Sean, for helping out with the show. Thanks to Mully and Haw for having me on this morning. I appreciate them lending me their huge platform that they have with that show. And thanks to you for listening. Even if you don't completely get it, I appreciate that you were willing to at least think about it. Have a wonderful rest of your day. Try to donate and be active in some of these communities if you care about them. I'll be back tomorrow at noon here on The Score. Neil Parkins are next.
Tripping. I'm out of here anyway. Peace out.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.